This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is that time, everybody. We look forward to it every single week here with Wyman and Bob. We bring in the best in the business. He is the color analyst of your Seattle Mariners. He is the one, the only, Mike Blowers, joining us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Mike, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. But you know why? They're playing pretty good right now.
Pretty good feels like an understatement. Let's talk about last night's game before we go back to the A's series. I don't even really know what to say about last night's game. I was emotional at the end of that game. I'm not even kidding, Mike. For whatever reason, I got choked up when Dylan Moore hit that grand slam. It was that vibe, that tension, the electricity, that wasn't a regular season. That wasn't game 101. That felt like game one of the playoffs or game one of the World Series. What does a win like that do for a clubhouse, for a team?
Well, first of all, for those guys, it probably feels the same way for them, because I've been there, I've been in the situation, and I know we have 2 months to go, but you're playing an opponent that is first in your division. You're trying to keep pace with a club that you just won 3 out of 4. Good things are happening for you, and you're down early in that ball game, and you fight your way back until Dylan finally hits the grand slam. I guarantee you it felt that way. I mean, the fans were great, by the way. They were certainly into it. But if you watch the reaction of those guys, it's exactly the same thing. And to your point, Bob, after Aaron made the call on the home run and did his whole thing, and then there was silence just to let the fans, you know, listen to the fans and watch the players stuff. And I believe the comment I made was, you got to be kidding me. I mean, those things just rarely happen, right? I mean, you're lucky if you see that once a season, but the timing of it to be last night against Houston right before the deadline, it was just perfect.
What would you say about Dylan Moore? I had a question for you about him a couple of weeks ago, and then he had a couple of maybe, you know, some errors and some plays, some misplays, but he looked so confident after hitting that. It was like he expected to hit that grand slam, but I love the way that kid busted out of the box. He just seems like a great guy and just a guy that you root for.
He's one of my favorites. If you talk to him, you'll like him even more. But I think for me, he has a unique skill set, and I know it was a rough first half for him. I think if you look at where his home run numbers were and where his stolen bases are, those were just fine. If he can get to the point to where he can just be more consistent at the plate, there's a lot that he brings to the table. And we saw it last year. We saw what he's capable of last year. Last year, you know, whatever it was in the 60 games, he had something like 12 home runs and I don't know how many stolen bases. He's a super athlete, strong kid. He just kind of needs to get it going in the right direction. And for me, he's somebody, if he plays like he did last year, with the 60 games that are remaining, 61 games that are remaining on the rest of the schedule, he does exactly what he did last year. I think everybody changes their minds about what's happening with him, because then all of a sudden you're looking at 20 home runs, a kid that's going to steal you 30 bases. I think that it's unfortunate the way the season started for him, because I think he's a much better player than he's shown.
It's weird to think of where this team would be without the bullpen that they've had this year, Mike. I mean, with very few exceptions, this bullpen has been ridiculous. And last night was a perfect example. I mean, McCacken, I'm not ripping him, but that was a brutal start. I mean, you thought the game was over after the first inning. You give up 6 runs. You're like, oh, my goodness, this is a bloodbath. And hopefully he can just stretch it out. And to his credit, he goes 4 innings, you know, saving the bullpen a bit, but they go 5 innings against this offense and they give up 1 run. And it just, and they have bailed, the pitchers, the starters have not been going deep as of late. It's not as if, you know, these guys are coming in the 8th and 9th. They're getting used a lot. Just give me a thought on how well this bullpen has really gelled and how just beyond reliable they seem to be.
Well, I mean, the club is nowhere near in the situation that they're in right now, and they're making these games so meaningful without the bullpen. And it was kind of an unknown going into the season. We had an idea what Graveman was going to be about. We thought we knew what Montero was going to be coming over from Texas and what he was able to do for the Rangers, but that obviously didn't work out. But when you start looking at Misevich and Seawall and Sadler and Steckenrider, I mean, the list goes on. We knew very little about any of these guys, and I think the hardest thing to do is to try to predict what any bullpen is going to be over the course of a season, because it's just so volatile all the time. Moving parts, you just don't know. These guys, I think that this is the best bullpen I have seen in years. And it's consistently good on a nightly basis. It gives Scott options. All of that being said, they're going to have to get a fifth starter, and they have to get the starters to go deeper into games, because these guys are pitching a lot. And you can only do that for so long. Eventually it's going to catch up to you. And they carried them in the first half. So they're going to have to get it going on the other side of it. And they're starting to. The rotation is starting to, but they certainly need some help. The bullpen days, I think, are coming to an end just because it's necessary. Because you need these guys to be ready to go. I mean, the job that Swanson did last night, the two innings he pitched, he was terrific. But you're going to have to give them a break from time to time. So you can do that two ways, either by your starting rotation or scoring a bunch of runs offensively. So I think the thing that they're probably, if something's going to happen with this club and they're going to make a deal somewhere, I hope Jerry is able to find a starter somewhere, because look, there's nothing you can do about injuries. They've had a ton of them to their rotation. But it is what it is, and this is where you sit. And these guys have really fought to be in the position that they're in, and they need some help. And I would look at the rotation just to help them out until guys get healthy. They're working their way back, but you don't know how that's going to go. So we'll see what happens.
Mike, Bob mentioned the A's series. They're 6-4, I think, now against the A's this year. Is this their natural rivalry, you think, the A's? Is it Houston because of what happened last night? And just any memories you have of rivalries within a division or a team that you just love to beat?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it always seems to have been more Oakland than Houston, because Houston has been so dominant over the years, especially against the Mariners. But that's changed. This year they've played well against Houston. We'll see what happens when they go down to their ballpark. That's where the real test comes, in their park. But I think that, you know, you start to stir things up a little bit, and that can certainly cause a rivalry to happen, even though you don't think. And you can look at them differently, either by production of your teams or by things that happened last night towards the end of that game last night. You can create some there. But I would say it's probably more Oakland than anything, just because Oakland always seems to be right there for the taking with these guys. But they always just seem to push their way out ahead. I think Bob Melvin has done a terrific job with what he's had to work with over the years in Oakland. So, but the Mariners, you know, because they're so young, these guys are going to be around for a while now. Once they figure it all out, a number of them are going to be around for years. That's when you're really going to see how it goes and where it tips and what happens to Houston when they start to lose players like they're going. So they've already lost Springer. Correa is going to be a free agent. I'll see how that all works out for them. But I think it's a pretty good start for these guys. But the main thing that you have to do more than anything, you have to consistently win ball games. I mean, that's just what it comes down to.
I thought one of the cool things, and we had fun with it yesterday, were the comments from Irvin back in, what was it, in March or May, whatever it was, when he was like, I shouldn't be giving up 10 hits to a team like this, and nobody should. But, you know, he really was pretty demeaning toward the Mariners, and they did a nice job of playing it off, like, oh, I didn't even really hear it, or I didn't know anything about it. They knew. J.P. Crawford tweeted out a picture of those comments, and everybody knew about it. Did you ever have anybody talk smack back in the day that you guys, you know, the bulletin board material, so to speak? Did you guys ever talk about things like that before a game? Like, hey, this guy over there said this about us, or do you guys use that? It's different in baseball, I would assume, compared to football, where it's one game a week. You can gear up for it all week. But do you ever have a moment like that in baseball?
Not so much the talking part of it. It's more in-game stuff that we would have our issues with other players or other teams, kind of like what you saw last night. You know, the social media wasn't a part of our game. And,
right.
And to be honest with you, the game has changed a lot. The way these guys view it and the things that they're willing to do on the field, and everybody seems accepting of it, that stuff was just not going to happen when I was playing. And there's certainly, I think, popping off was kept to a minimum. You just didn't do it. And to be honest with you, because of the way the game was played and what we were allowed to do, a lot of that stuff was just handled by the players anyway, you know? So I can guarantee you this though. And I said it on the air too, that when they started to beat him around again, and I think he went four innings in his last outing against them, I said, you know, the guys in the dugout are really enjoying this right now. Because even though they're not screaming and yelling and talking to everybody else, I guarantee you they were talking about it in that dugout.
What do you think went on? What went on Let me just rephrase that. What do you think went on there with Raley? As far as, you know, I was listening to, I think it was a Houston Astros broadcast, and they were saying, oh, well, it was a curveball, but just that exchange there, and then Crawford finally getting hit by the pitch and Scott's reaction.
I thought Scott's reaction was awesome. I loved it.
So did
I. And I thought that, and I thought JP, you know, not surprised he handled like a pro, but, I mean, for me, you know, you throw a breaking ball and for a ball, I think it was, and then you hang one in the middle of the plate. And this is right after you've just given up a grand slam to Dylan Moore. And JP takes a healthy cut at it like he should early in the count. And I think he lost his helmet, almost fell down, fouling it off. And then he pitched inside three times in a row while the catcher's setting up away. You don't miss that badly. And I thought it was intentional. And I thought that Scott was right about the thing that he said. You don't know what's in his mind. You can't read his mind. But if you look at what happened, even if it was unintentional, you have to expect a reaction from that. That's just because the timing of it would have been that bad.
You know, going back to the grand slam, what preceded that was huge. And I know it's not a bright, shiny object, but I got to give credit to Jared Kelnick. As much as I've been, you know, watching him go, man, this kid is so overmatched and he looks like he's up in his head again. He's hitting 102. That walk was really, really impressive to me because, A, he is that young kid who is desperately trying to succeed. And you could see him, you know, waving at a pitch that's soft and away. Everything off speed and away seems like it's been his kryptonite. Yet in that at bat, he didn't go for it. And he to work a walk in that situation with two outs. And I know Murphy did the same thing after him, but Murphy is a veteran. Just considering the position Kelnick is in and just desperately trying to succeed, to show that discipline in that moment, it was absolutely huge. And if he doesn't, obviously you don't have the opportunity for the grand slam. Give me a thought on that at bat with Kelnick.
I was really pulling for him, first of all. And secondly, as the at bat was going along with Stanek out there, after the first pitch was thrown, I kind of had a real good idea of what Stanek was going to try to do. And my hope was that as I was talking about it in game, that Kelnick could somehow hear what I was saying. Because I was just like, man, here comes the heater. Get ready to hit catch up to this fastball. You know, you're going to have to time up 98 miles an hour. And he put a really good swing on it. He fouled it off, which was concerning because I was like, man, that's the one that he had to put forward right there. But again, it's 98 miles an hour. And he knows he has the split. That had to be in the back of his mind. But then, you know, when he gets to 3-2 and he fouled the pitch off again, I was like, okay, he's going to have to lay off this split because it's coming. He's going to throw this split. I was sure of it. And sure enough, he threw the split, and it was actually a pretty good one. And for him to take that pitch, I think, said a lot. I was really impressed with that at bat overall because the place was going nuts. I'm sure he's never been in front of a crowd like that. You're up against Houston out there, and for him to be able to calm down and just – and have that kind of at bat against that kind of stuff that Stanek has, it was real impressive to me.
Well, and then, you know, I thought also when he scored on the walk-off wild pitch, it's funny, I Cameron was commenting on that last night about, I just like seeing him smile. And I think you said that same thing, Mike, that mm-hmm. you thought that really meant something. And it was cool. He had a good at bat to get on base in that game on the walk-off wild pitch, but also just him being the guy that gets the baby powder thrown on him and everything. It seems like that's really important to his development.
I would agree with that. And if you go back and you see it, when Dylan hits the home run and they're all in the dugout, he's kind of in the background a little bit, but the smile on his face right there, just the joy of it was awesome. You know, you can wallow in your own sorrows at times, but he hasn't done that really. He's hard on himself. And he's kind of smoothed that out a little bit more. But it's really about the team, and you're a pretty good teammate when you have your own personal struggles. But when something good happens, you show that kind of joy. And I think that's the conversation that Scott Service has had with him, and we're seeing it. We're seeing it right there in front of us. So my hope is that we're getting to the second half of the season. He's had some good at-bats. He's been able to take some walks. We all want him to hit more. But hopefully this is, you know, baby steps to him working his way back to that point. And then eventually I'd like to see him go and have a game where he gets three hits and then just kind of takes off from there. But I think for a 21-year-old young man, he's handled all of this really well, especially when I'm sure he never expected it to go like this. When you are a first-round pick and everybody's talking about you, you just expect it just to be smooth the whole way. And when it's not, it's real easy, I think, to get down on yourself and blame everybody else and what's going on. But he hasn't done any of that. And he's obviously got a ton of talent. So We'll see what happens moving forward with him. But I think right now these are baby steps for him, and it's one of those things where it'll probably, you know, be a slow climb out of it, but we'll have to wait and see.
You know, another thing that I thought was really good to see last night, Mike, was J.P. Crawford, three hits last night. He'd gone, I think he had one hit in six games. I mean, I was saying to these guys, man, I think they need to give him a night off. I don't know if he's tired, but, you know, he was definitely scuffling, and he came up with a hit in that final A's game. He went 1-for-4, but to see him go 3-for-4 last night and looking like, it looked like he was getting pull happy, perhaps, like he wasn't using the whole field. Are you seeing a difference in just the past two games versus the previous six where he seemed to really be struggling?
I think it's funny how it works sometimes, to be honest with you. I can tell you for myself, I've gone into the All-Star break feeling really good at the plate and swinging well. And then you get the 3 or 4 days off and you come back and it almost feels like you're starting over again, Bob. Some guys will get hot right away and other guys will struggle a little bit trying to get their feet back on the ground. It always seemed to me like the game had sped up a little bit. It would take me 3 or 4 games before I felt normal again, if you will. And I think maybe that was more the case with JP than anything. I think that he played so well and he, you know, he plays so hard all the time that he probably, and I haven't talked to him, but my guess would be over the 4 days, he probably didn't do anything. And good for him because he plays every single day and he's at a premium position and he's the best at it, by the way. And then offensively what he was giving them. So I just think it was just one of those things, just a little bit of time. For me, watching him and with knowing what his approach is at the plate, I wasn't concerned about it. I knew that eventually this would work itself out and he would get back to spraying the ball around, and that's exactly what we saw last night. And, you know, hopefully he'll just take off again. But he's somebody to me just because he's really adamant about the way he approaches the game and staying more left center. Eventually good things are going to happen. And then, and on top of everything else, he puts the ball in play and gives himself a chance. So I'm not concerned about him at all.
I love the player broadcast and you and Dan going back and forth and Angie. And so tell us a little bit more on the Dan Wilson card. So it's Dan Wilson's baseball card. It's got your picture on it. I wanted to know, did Goldie really go online and try to buy one? And was it really only worth 94 cents, Mike?
My guess would be that is exactly what Aaron probably did. And I was actually pleasantly surprised that it was worth 94 cents. But it was more probably because it was Dan's card than my picture.
Right.
It's all good, though.
Hey, Mike, as we're approaching the trade deadline here, for me, there's zero question as to whether this team is a buyer or a seller. They absolutely should be buyers. I feel like they owe it to that clubhouse to let them see this season through and give them some help. I feel like a starter for the rotation, perhaps a bullpen arm. I know Jerry said he wants a right-handed bat, a second baseman. How would you prioritize those things? What would be 1, 2, 3, and 4 for you?
Yeah, I think just because of the amount of injuries and what these guys have had to go through and the amount of work that the bullpen has done, I think the priority for me would be a starter. They've been able to weather a lot when you consider all the injuries, starting with Paxton, the Margavichs, the Newsom, the Sheffield, the Dunn. I mean, it's unreal what they've been able to do. But to me, the bullpen is the real strength of this club. And if you want it to remain that way, you have to get another starter in there. And get these guys going deeper in the ballgame, just take some of the pressure off because they're certainly capable. And I think that when you look at it right now, Flexen has been terrific. Goes to the All-Star game. I thought encouraging signs for Marco in his last two outings, and now he's going to be on a regular schedule and he's going to go every fifth day. I think that will certainly help him a lot. You start to look at it and you can say, yeah, these things are about to happen, but you have to have that fifth starter. I know Sheffield's working his way back, but just – injury kind of makes me a little bit nervous right now, so I'd like to see a deal for a starter.
Mike, is there a throwback player on this team that you like? I know we talked about Dylan Moore. Maybe it's him, but any of the guys you think that would have fit right in when you played?
Gosh, I think there's a ton of them.
It's a good sign, right?
Yeah, it's a great sign. You know, it's one of the things. I was having a conversation with somebody today, and I said it's a really easy team to root for. Just for me personally, just because I watch them and I think to a man, they all fit, you know, Haniger would fit on my team. I think, you know, the athlete that Kelnick is, he would fit on my team. I love Shed. I love watching him play. He'd have played on my team. Seager, of course, France fits. He's perfect. Like, yeah, that's no problem. Raleigh Murphy. I mean, you go right down the line, JP Crawford and what he does. And, you know, the gamer in the group there is Dylan Moore, too. They just need to get him going on a consistent basis. So, yeah, this team is this team's awesome to watch, man. I love the back end of the bullpen and what those guys do. They have some attitude about and some confidence. You can just sense it for good reason. Yeah, I think that's it's one of the things that I've really enjoyed this year. Is not that, you know, the winning and all that stuff is terrific, but just the way they go about it and how they pull for each other as a collective group, the starters included. I mean, it's just a fun group to watch. And none of us know how this is going to turn out at the end. But I feel like we've already gotten a bonus out of this thing when you consider that it was supposed to be just another, you know, part of the rebuilding and getting these guys more experience. But we've gotten way more than that. And they're gaining more experience now because these games are meaningful and they're in their division. They're going to play a lot against Houston the rest of the way. It'll be fun to watch.
It has been a lot of fun to watch. The team is anything but boring, Blow. They are. I look forward to these games each and every single night. So let's hope it continues. Mike, we always appreciate it, man. Great stuff, and we'll do it again next week.
Yep, talk to you next Tuesday. Thanks, guys.
There you go. There's Mike Blowers with us every week. He does such a great job on the broadcast and always fun. I could talk to him for hours.
You know, it's funny. I was telling Lefko, I've got like 10 leftover questions because every time we have him, then one week he was on vacation, you know, during the All-Star week. So, and I have a page that has a star on it and I cross them off, but I've got like 30,
as you ask him.
30 leftover questions for Mike Blowers because, yeah, he's a great storyteller. He does a really good job. I love hearing him and Dan Wilson and Angie the other day. It was really fun. But you call him that, and I think, you know, sometimes you hype people up when they come on, like Moyer. You say he's the greatest ever. But when you say...
How do you know I'm not sincere with Paul?
I know, I'm just kidding. No, but when you say, you know, Blauer's the best analyst in the business, I think he is. He really does a good job of explaining the game. And that, you know, the thing I like about it is he doesn't try to talk over anybody's head. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the thing. You're supposed to bring the game to people. You're not supposed to confuse them. You're not supposed to, you know, use fancy terms or do anything like that. You're supposed to bring the game to them, and I think he does a great job of that.
Yeah, he really does. So always look forward to that conversation. I know the fans, listeners love hearing from him. So it's good stuff. Everybody wins. All right, coming up, our Seahawks Top 20 Countdown comes to an end. We unveil our top five. That's straight ahead with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor John Clayton will join us, talk some NFL with him. Our thanks to Mike Blowers for joining us in the previous segment. If you guys missed that, it will be available on the podcast page after the show at 710sports.com and just click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. It'll be right there waiting for you. We just had a little video FaceTime visit from our buddy Adam Ray, comedian extraordinaire, who's just hilarious.
Just happened to be dressed up like Jay Leno today.
Yeah, he's on set, decided to give us a little FaceTime call, and he was working some comedy on Dave, who didn't laugh, and he's like, hey, tough room here. Huh?
Hey, look, I walked past your computer, and you had a picture of him up the other day, and I started laughing looking at his face. So.
His face makes you laugh.
99.9% of the time.
Yeah, he's good. He'll be back in Seattle, by the way, playing at the Hard Rock Cafe August 27th and 28th, of which we will definitely have to go out there.
Yeah.
You missed him last time. You got to go out this time.
We'll get together.
Fantastic. So maybe he'll make an appearance on the show here soon. Always a good time with him. But we reached the end of our top 20 countdown, Dave, of our Seahawks top 20. We have worked our way through the lists. Again, we've done it. This has become an annual thing for us. We've done it. There's been many imitators, but they can't duplicate it. They can't duplicate it, Dave.
Well, it's kind of fun to go back and look at, you know, where you made your mistakes and things like that. So... And, you know, and I was looking at mine, Bob, and I'm going, you know what? I'm building a theme here. And the theme.
From this year or last year?
Well, really both. But this year, I would say more so. I'm building a theme of hitters. I want hitters. So, I mean, that to me is where I'm placing a premium on that, of the physical, downhill, nasty hitters. And those are the guys. That's why I'm talking about. You know, and I think Puna's that way. I think Trey Brown can be that way. Gabe Jackson, Cody Barton, Marquise Blair, Damian Lewis, Will Disley, you know, Wagner, and then Jordan Brooks and Quentin Diggs.
Yeah.
Quandre Diggs.
Quandre Diggs,
So, yeah, I mean, look, I was thinking of Quentin Dunbar last year. I don't know if he was on my list or not. I don't think so.
He wasn't on mine.
Didn't work out well for him.
No. Well, your list last year, do you want to give your top five? Do you have it there in front of you?
Yeah, my top five from last year, number five was Will Dissly.
Mm-hmm.
Number four was Carson. Number three was Bobby Wagner. Number two was Jamal Adams. And number one was Russell. So, yeah, I mean, okay. I mean, Dissly didn't get used that much. Carson, you know, was in and out of the lineup. What about you? You had...
Number five for me last year was Dwayne Brown, who was very good.
Always a good choice.
Number four was Tyler Lockett. Number three was Jamal Adams. Number two was Bobby Wagner. And number one was Russ.
Yeah, I think we just had those two switched. And then, you know, I had Carson in there, and you had Tyler Lockett in there.
And you had Dissly.
So, yeah.
And Brown.
Yep. So this year, shall I go?
Yeah.
All right, number five, Lockett. Tyler Lockett, I got at five. I've moved him up just because he... It's just the catches he makes are ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I would just say this, though. I put him one behind DK Metcalf because DK's youth and just the potential that he has. But at number four, I got DK Metcalf. Number three, this is a bit of a – I mean, if you want to hit things right, you would go with guys that are a little bit – it's not like Chris Carson's that unreliable, though. I mean, it's like he missed the last two games of the 2019 season and then the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That was key. I mean, that hurt them.
That's huge.
So, but I have Chris Carson at number three because I just think, again, I'm building my theme around people that hit. That's what the basics are in pro football and any level of football. Just watching my Wooster High School state championship game, Bob, and the thing that we did, we knocked the crud out of those guys, and that's the thing that wins football games. It's the most basic level. I don't, you know, speed is great, all that, but it comes down to hitting. So that's why I have Chris Carson at three, and then Jamal Adams at two, who once again is another. He's a hitter, and mm-hmm. he refuses to be blocked. And then, of course, it's no mystery we all have Russell at number one.
Yeah,
who you
yeah.
got?
Number five for me is DK. He moved up from last year. I mean, obviously, a huge year, over 1,000 yards receiving. Dwayne Brown, I still think, is one of the best left tackles in all of football and obviously crucial to the success of Russell Wilson protecting his blind side. So I've got him at number four. Bobby, I've got at number three. So I had him higher. You had him at nine, right?
Bobby at nine, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, coming off last year, I probably could have had him lower, to be honest. But I expect that maybe they're going to use him differently with Jordan Brooks out on the field more often. Maybe he gets more of a break, makes him more impactful. So I've got him at three. Jamal Adams is number two for me. I think he is an absolute lightning rod on the defense. I think he is a playmaker. He brings the energy. He brings the intensity. He brings the excitement. Even if he isn't directly responsible for the play, he's there. He's just watching him on the sidelines. He just brings an attitude and an element to the game that nobody else on that defense does. And it doesn't mean there aren't great players there. He's just different. He just is a difference maker on that defense. He's a big play guy. And then Russell's number one. Of course. So we're kind of in the same area. Jamal Adams probably should have been my number two last year as well, but he's if he can stay healthy, the guy is special. I mean, really the only knock on him is that he doesn't hang on to the ball when it hits him in the hands, and thankfully he's not a receiver. But just the amount of plays, I mean, you just see he just has a nose for the ball. He's always around the play. He's blowing up plays in the backfield. He's coming up with sacks. His intensity, his enthusiasm is contagious. I love watching that guy play.
Remember the sack he had in Washington? He was somewhere between the numbers and the hash mark on the opposite side of the field, and Haskins takes off running away from him. So not only was he, you know, way to the left, he was also about 7 or 8 yards deep, and he sacked Haskins. I think 3 yards deep, or maybe it was like right up on the line, but still, he covered an unbelievable amount of grass there. And that was not a blitz, of course. I mean, he dropped back in coverage and just ran him out of bounds. But it just, I think Haskins was surprised by that. And I remember he took a pretty big hit there because he didn't see him coming. Or he saw him and then kind of wrote him off like, well, that guy can't catch me. Yes, he can. So those kinds of plays are, again, it's Earl Thomas worthy, where you run it back and go, where in the world did this guy come from? How did he make that play? He was 17, 18 yards deep. All of a sudden, he's in the backfield. Yeah, he's that kind of guy. I don't know. You know, I hope that I tend to think that, again, the hitting and defense, I think, are really important this year. You know, maybe as much, if not more, than what the offense does. I don't worry about the offense as much because you have Russell Wilson. You've got some great pieces there. I'm more concerned about the defense, but maybe that's because I'm an old linebacker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that never leaves you, Dave.
Yeah, well, remember, you know, after the Ram playoff game, I mean, everybody was really mad at the offense. I think it was the one guy. I'm mad at the defense. Look at how did they do that to our defense?
This is beat by a guy who was missing a thumb.
Yeah. And he's a dope.
Oh.
He's
brutal.
A moron. Sorry, Jared Goff.
All right.
He really just is not very smart.
All right, coming up, did Darren McCacken actually save the Mariners last night? We'll tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us. Talk some football with him. I forgot to appropriately name the previous segment when we did the top five, as Lefko put some creative effort into that one. It's the Why Don't You Talk About the Mariners segment.
We got that yesterday.
In honor of our complaint yesterday when we were talking Mariners all day, and then the one segment we talked about Seahawks or football, somebody
nine minutes
in capital letters, why aren't you talking about the Mariners? It was awesome. Oh,
so yeah, we talked about football for 9 minutes. We're probably going to do the same thing today.
That tells you how excited people are about this team. Usually the Seahawks rule all, and they still do. They're still the biggest thing in town. But usually they're always anticipating a Seahawks conversation, a topic, the Seahawks news, whatever's going on. But the fact that the Mariners are you know, people are like, why aren't you talking about them more? Why would you talk football when the Mariners are doing this? That just tells you how invested people have become. And just seeing it, like I said, on the text, on Twitter, everything has been so much fun. And
well, maybe this would be a good time if the Mariners do need to have a little correction this year, because we got football starting tomorrow.
Yeah?
Yeah, so we'll be out there at camp tomorrow, first
day
of practice.
Don't correct yet.
That's fine.
They need to keep rolling.
We can do both.
We
just have one-hour shows coming up here pretty soon, two-hour shows. So
yeah. Imagine having two teams that are really – I mean, the Mariners are in the middle of their season, not even the middle, headed toward the end, but – They're headed toward the postseason. We always expect the Seahawks to be in the postseason. We could be like other cities and have two good teams instead of just one.
We've had that, Bob.
Well, we've had the Storm, which would be great. The Sounders, yeah. But if we're being honest, you're talking about major sports. The major sports, you know, you're talking about NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, and hockey. Now we've got a hockey team coming. We'll see what happens there. But you know, to have an embarrassment of riches like, you know, Boston has had with, you know, the Red Sox and the Celtics and everything going on there and the New York team. It'd be cool to have, you know, more than one at a time here.
Well, especially going into fall when, you know, the football season's just getting started, and you know, the start they had last year where they were 5-0, you know, I think it's the first time since Pete's been here anyway. I'm not sure if it was franchise history. I can't remember. But anyway, yeah, and you could have the Mariners just in the hunt. That's all we care about. But can you imagine if they're in the hunt, we're in September, they have a game like this? I feel like there's going to be more of these. The way they're playing right now, they just – I don't know what you think it says about a team. It's a lot about how tight they are. Mm-hmm. But winning these kinds of games typically was reserved for the teams that had veterans. Veteran leadership, you know, hey, don't hang your head. Doesn't matter how far back you are. And once again, like I said, it's like a check you put in your back pocket or a recipe. You know, you've been down 7-0 before. Guess what happened? So that's the kind of thing that usually comes with older teams.
Yeah.
Guys with more experience.
Well, and they're starting to believe. And J.P. Crawford, after the game, talked about just feeling like we go into it knowing we've got the ability to win any of these games.
We're competing with everybody, and we go into the game knowing that. And we go into the game knowing that we could beat any team that steps on the same field as us. And we keep that mentality throughout the whole year. We're going to be a problem. As you can see right now, we're playing really good ball right now.
They're a problem, Dave. They're a problem. People are fired. I just love seeing the fan base energized like this, you know, because it's been a while. It's easy to be cynical. They've given you reasons to be cynical. I get it.
I don't blame anybody for being cynical. I mean, you could carry it too far. We had somebody texting us in earlier going, that win wasn't impressive. They've been doing that all year. What are you talking about? They've been doing that all year. They were down 7-0. They gave up 6 in the first inning. They don't do that all year. He's talking about the TO, well, capitalizing on the other team's mistakes. What mistakes? There were no fluky plays in this game. I mean, these guys worked walks. They worked the pitches. They controlled the zone. They hit a grand slam, came up with timely hits. What are you talking about? Got lucky.
Yeah, it's funny, too. Over the weekend, just a little bit, we were talking about going in, about Demo playing second base and Shed Long. I talked about how much I'd love to have those two guys. And Dylan Moore had a little bit of difficulty over the weekend with the A's in a couple of those games, and then comes back just so confidently. And when he pointed after he hit that grand slam, I thought, oh, no, that's too soon. Hold on.
Oh, he knew it as soon as he made contact.
I think everybody would have known it.
Yeah.
I mean, just the way that felt. But
I think I'm going to tweet that video to the Astros. I'll send that one to them.
Ask them if they – did you see this?
By the way, did you see this? I love that people are just getting into trolling what – I assume is our arrival. I don't know if it's the Astros. I don't know if it's the A's. It could be both. Could be both, which makes it twice as fun. It's fun to have teams you sports hate, and I sports hate both of these teams. Astros still a little bit more, but you know, like I said, we had 120 some retweets on that. You know, trolling Swerve and Irvin from the A's after he got knocked out after 4 innings. All his big talk about I shouldn't be giving up hits to a team like this. Nobody should. And then watching the Astros after their cocky media people got on Twitter and said 6 runs in the first, you love to see it, SEA. So I think I had like 6 retweets on it. There's 19 now, so people have been sending it back to.
We want to get to 125.
Yeah,
it's like a telethon.
Troll the Astros too. Let's just troll. Let's just make these things rivalries. Make these guys rivals. That's what I want to do. I want there to be mutual dislike on both ends. To where you anticipate, you look at where are these guys on the schedule. Okay, I can't wait for this series. Can't wait to see what happens here. That's fun.
I don't know if this is our 509 Kelnick hater, but he said that he needs to be sent back to Arkansas to learn how to hit. Can't have center fielder hitting under 100. If Mike Blowers, best analyst in the business, is to be believed, he's taken some positive steps. And a couple of them are just little things. And probably something I wouldn't have noticed 10 years ago when I was not really watching baseball every night. His at-bats, they're good at-bats. And he's starting to lay off of certain kinds of pitches, putting himself on base. Do we care how he gets on first base? No, we don't. And then he has, the celebration over the last few days that he's had. He's smiling. He's having a good, I think he's on the right track right now. And it'll be interesting to see what's the next baby step that he takes. And I think they're going to be patient with him. But they seem to like the kid. It seems like everybody likes him, he's a little bit, he's competitive, he's tough on himself, I think, a lot of times, but.
I think he's certainly, for anybody that's worried he's too cocky, I think he's been humbled in a very big way, if that was even a problem. And by everybody's estimation that's close to him, talking about other players and managers and coaches, nobody felt it was problematic. There's a difference between having belief and being confident and being arrogant. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that maybe he looks that way. Maybe some of his comments read that way. And I read some of those comments before where he said, I know for a fact I could have helped this team last year.
A little on the arrogant side.
Yeah. That one was a little, I think he's learning now. Well, maybe I couldn't have, yeah. I mean, because you've had 2 goes so far and is great. And I will give him all the credit in the world for that at bat because it was big. He is really still struggling. He is still pressing. He is still being fooled by the off-speed stuff away. And I would think as he watches the tape that he's seeing how guys are attacking him. It's up to him to make that adjustment now. So we'll see. I believe he's got the ability, but he's got to show it. He's got to show it at some point.
Well, the 509 says he's not a Kelnick hater, just observant. I sure would hate to see it now based on some of the things that we're hearing about the steps that he's taking right now. So. And, against some of the best. But, the other thing about yesterday's game, when Altuve gets up and goes 1-2-3, I think it was 3-pitch strikeout, yeah. I was like, oh, man, here we go. This McCacken kid. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
And
there we went.
But you know what? Like you said, at least he gave you a longer, performance. Was it four
innings? Third?
Four. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, they're really taxing their bullpen, but Hector Santiago back. So
that's good.
That's good news.
That is very good news. All right. We're going to talk some football. So it'll be the non-Mariner segment here. Buckle up for that. We will talk NFL as training camp gets underway starting tomorrow for your Seahawks. If you guys have questions for John Clayton, now is the time to text them in, 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.